I want to be a believer. I want to be positive. I want to be able to give everybody this like happy news that college football is going to be just fine. But man, after yesterday, it's getting tougher and tougher to think that college football is going to be anything like what we've seen in the past, if at all, coming into the fall. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike, sitting with Mike Golic Jr., represented by Progressive Insurance. All guests will join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. And Mike, you know me, usually I'm like skipping on in. It's Thigh Day. I'm excited to work with you on Thigh Day Friday. And, you know,
I'm a little disturbed by the length of shorts you wore in today, but that's a whole separate discussion.
We'll get there. I'm coming. Usually I would be the guy that's coming in and ready to socially distance, elbow bump, and hug and have a great Friday. I'm scared. I'm nervous. For the first time, I can actually say at this point, I'm sitting here and I'm imagining the Warner Brothers cartoon where you just see the little white flag come up and just start waving around. That's what it feels like happens after the Big Ten became the first conference yesterday to announce that they're eliminating non-conference games. It should be noted that they are keeping their conference schedule, at least for now. That hasn't been affected, but they will be eliminating any non-conference games. Reports are that the ACC will be soon to follow. So we're seeing conferences start to just chunk out games, and it makes me nervous that we're not going to see college football at all.
This is what people on the internet would lump into the further overarching umbrella that is the big sad. 2020 has been ripe with the big sad in a lot of this one, because it's the totality of this week in college football. It is the Ivy League making their decision. It's Stanford starting to cut teams in a way that you know is going to start happening at others soon. And then you're right, the Big Ten being the first domino to fall in this one, because we had talked about and flirted with this idea and heard of it, but with a conference with the backing and history and power of the Big Ten to come out and do this, like hearing Gene Smith, Ohio State's athletic director, who holds as important a position in college football as anyone, come out and talk like this about fall sports is concerning.
I am very concerned. I think in our last conversation, I was, cautiously optimistic. I'm not even there now. So I am concerned that we may not be able to play, which is why we took the measure that we took in order to try and have September available to us for conference games and give us the flexibility and control to handle disruptions if we're able to start a season. We just didn't respond to our opportunities that were provided to us. People need to follow the protocols and give our kids a chance to compete.
The way he says if in there, if we're able to have a season, I mean, that sort of it has such a doomsday tone. And look, we got to be clear. We've only lost a few games, so it's still salvageable, right? We've lost some great games, but we've only lost a few games so far into this process with the Big Ten announcement.
Yeah, most teams play 8 or 9 conference games depending on the conference. I mean, so you look at this and you can say, yeah, you've only lost a couple of games in all this one. But in general, it's, again, parts. We're putting together plot lines now that are going to start to form a trend in here. And that's why I said with the backdrop of the Ivy decision, with the backdrop of Stanford's decision, the SEC came out and was the one that was sort of the outlier yesterday. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, came out and said, we'll continue to meet regularly with our campus leaders in the coming weeks, guided by medical advisors, to make important decisions necessary to determine the best path forward related to all SEC fall sports. We recognize the challenges ahead and know the well-being of our student-athletes, coaches, and staff and fans must remain at the forefront of those decisions. So they have put this off a little longer, but we expect to hear it from everybody else. And this seems like a situation, the more and more you listen and talk to people, it sounds like we expect it to get a little uglier. And then the prospect of a spring season and these things are all things I'm starting to mentally prepare myself for in a way that I wasn't sure the case was going to be a month ago.
Go look and go ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Jason Fitz in for Trey and Mike. We're sitting with Mike Golic Jr. Some of the games that we won't have now: Michigan at Washington, Ohio State at Oregon, which was going to be one of the big landmark early season games, Penn State, Virginia Tech, and one that hits your heart, Notre Dame versus Wisconsin, which was those are big opportunities for both schools in the constant playoff conversation to show it against another big brand. So not a matchup we're used to getting either. So
no,
bummer to see that go away.
And that was one of the things that in the college football playoff era we had talked about maybe becoming more in vogue, thankfully, which is these big-time out-of-conference matchups. This one wasn't a home-and-home. It was going to be played Wisconsin's home game at Lambeau Field, Notre Dame's home game at Soldier Field instead of at Camp Randall and Notre Dame Stadium. But still, like a great out-of-conference matchup, right, could have those implications just in general for the health of college football and college athletics, big-time out-of-conference matchups. I did enjoy, by the way, and I have to almost have my after-you-know-what cigarette on this one, watching the collective internet thrash about and try and act like Notre Dame would be left out of whatever picture come forward. I mean, you know what? I applaud you guys, and again, in these dark times, find your joy wherever it is. And if we can supply your joy, if you can sit up here and think, well, is Notre Dame just going to play BYU and Army and all this one? I saw people putting up Chicago area high school schedules and throwing Notre Dame in on it. Like, that's cute, man. Get the jokes off. Like, good for all you guys. I know that you need this right now. I love this for you. So enjoy that. Have at it. This is great. You're doing great. You're all doing great. Right after John Swofford and the ACC came out almost immediately and said, if Notre Dame needs games, we got them.
And that's the most important part of this. Like, Notre Dame's not going to be for that portion of the conversation. Notre Dame wouldn't be left out. They already had six ACC games scheduled. The presumption is that if at this point they'll find a way to bolster the rest of their schedule with ACC games should they want to.
So. And that's worth noting, because the Pac-12 and a decision that could be made there soon is going to affect Notre Dame. They obviously play teams like Southern Cal, Stanford. They tend to have a Pac-12 portion of their schedule every year that now, in addition to losing Big Ten teams like we talked about, losing that would create a need for that. And with the contractual tie-in they already have with the ACC for other sports, it's a natural fit in all this, because this is a reminder that this decision for the conferences to operate as sole entities in this going forward is less about this idea of geography. Like, you look at the footprint of the Big Ten, and it's insane, like the geography and the mileage that it spans in all this one. And this would kind of be lumped into that with the ACC, because Notre Dame much more in, you know, general Big Ten country. This is about the conferences being able to operate more nimbly, to be able to make decisions for the most important part of there. Because as we saw yesterday with the NCAA's comic press release there, we have no true leadership in college football, because their response is to basically hold the football for a second and punt it right back into the hands of the people that actually run this sport. It's a joke.
Paul Feinbaum from the Paul Feinbaum Show was on First Take yesterday, talked about the lack of leadership in college football.
The biggest challenge college football has right now, in addition to fighting the virus, is that nobody's in charge. I don't think this is the first time we've mentioned this, but it's really the problem in every other sport that has been mentioned. There's a commissioner. There are people that understand the nuances. And in college football, we have five commissioners of the Power Five leagues who are trying to figure it out, but the NCAA does not necessarily have a vote here. They can offer some guidance, and they really haven't offered very much of that. So it is a mess.
The NCAA, remember when you were in those like big lecture classes and you had to take a test and the real smart kids in class would offer to help pass out the Scantrons? They're trying to help everybody out. That's the NCAA. Like, you're smart and you know the material and you're good at handing stuff out, but when we put you in front of the class and ask you to teach, you crap down your leg. Like, that's what goes on in this situation. No semblance of, we are led again. This is like what we talked about in the spring. And I said, you have every other league sending their commissioner out there to go ahead and, you know, put out some statement and put out some semblance of guidance about what's going to happen. And then the NCAA sends out the blue screen with, as COVID-19 pandemic continues to impact college sports nationally, the NCAA supports its members as they make important decisions based on their specific circumstances and in the best interest of the college athletes' health and well-being. Thank you, blue screen. Triumphant leader in this situation. It just underscores, and bashing the NCAA is easy, and I just kind of needed to do it there for a second. It underscores the need for the Power Five to do what we've been talking about. Break away, figure out a leader for that group, the Autonomy Five, whatever you want to call it. Figure out a central leader for that group so that when we get in these situations, you can operate with a little more togetherness and all this, be a little more coordinated, understand and pool the resources that you've all got collectively, and make a decision that's best for the health of the sport. Because now what we've got is a bunch of people that are working together behind the scenes. We hear the conference commissioners are on calls all the times, but there's still not a tie that binds. There's still not someone that they can sit up there and understand and count on in these moments, especially as you deliver your message to the public in a way that's a little less helter-skelter. So it just underscores what a dated model the NCAA is.
And you say that the conferences are working together, but several reports yesterday noted that the SEC was upset that the Big Ten made this decision so early. It is realistically the Wild Wild West in college football at this point, and nobody's talking to anybody in a way that gets anything done. Jason Fitzsimmons for Trey Wingo and Mike Golic. Sit with Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shel Penzo Performance Line. Why sad, Mike?
Because so we play that rejoin coming back, your high-pitched, squealy voice, and we all have laugh and have a good time. But then I'm just remembering as I look across you now, like my sister and her boyfriend are in town right now, and he was going out to get coffee, and he asked if we wanted anything. And yesterday he did, and he got us coffee, and it was great. And we both just got, you know, like cold brew coffee, just black. You had some vanilla in
sugar-free
it or something.
Sugar-free vanilla. Sugar-free vanilla. Yeah,
sugar-free vanilla. And so I get the text today, like, hey, do you guys want coffee again? I said, yeah, sure. And I look at Jason, I go, same order as yesterday, right? And Jason goes, no. Can I get a venti skinny vanilla latte? Like, I have to keep looking down because I've never had a complicated coffee order ever. And so when you say all these things to me, I'm like, all right, like, you want candy, and that's fine, like, but it's jarring for me.
Iced venti skinny vanilla latte. It's one of the most popular drinks at Starbucks. How have you never heard of this, considering the number of times you go? All it is coffee with a little bit of milk and a little bit of sugar-free vanilla, and it's skim milk because it's skinny. Come on now.
You know what? And, like, I get it. Like, and when I go out and, like, when I drink alcohol, I'm all for, like, I drink pink drinks all the time. Like, I don't subscribe that there are, like, drinks that we assign masculinity to. Like, drink whatever gets you going, whatever to get you drunk in that situation. But in this case, for some reason with coffee, I've always gone the other way. Maybe it's because I drink so much of it that I'm like, if I allow myself to drink it like candy, I will weigh 500 pounds. I will succumb to my father's side of the family's history of type 2 diabetes, and all will be lost.
That's why you go skinny, because it's sugar-free, and then it's skim milk. I mean, and milk, it does a body good. Come on. There's something here. Wait, have you ever tried it? That's all I'm saying. Have you ever tried it?
No, and I don't want to, because if I do and I like it, that only... Like, I drink so much coffee, if I take it anyway other than black as the night sky, I am setting myself up for disaster.
Wow. Go look at Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Speaking of not skinny, running backs were ranked on ESPN.com.
Running backs are skinny? How
dare
you?
They are not skinny. Running backs are powerful and thick.
Running backs are not thick.
Running backs are not. Derrick Henry is not thick.
Fullback. All right. Oh, you picked the one running back that's the size of a DN.
Well, that's because I spent a lot of time on Twitter. You only need one name to make your argument for you.
Sample sizes be damned. Derrick Henry is thick.
All right. So ESPN.com gave us the top 10 running backs. They've been going through the whole series. At number 10, they give us Le'Veon Bell. At number 9, we get the drastically underrated Josh Jacobs from my beloved Raiders. At number 8, Joe Mixon from the Bengals. Number 7, Nick Chubb from the Browns. Number 6, Dalvin Cook of the Minnesota Vikings. And then we get to the top 5, where you have the aforementioned Derrick Henry at 5 from the Titans. Kamara at 4 for the Saints. You got Zeke at 3 for the Cowboys, Christian McCaffrey at 2, Saquon at 1. Mike, your thoughts of the top 10 ranking?
So when I initially looked at this, I thought there's a very real argument, probably one I would make, that Christian McCaffrey should be number 1 on this list, just based on the otherworldly production that we saw last year. Obviously, I think Saquon has the most talent and is a great running back, but Christian McCaffrey has been on top of the game right now in a way that I think deserves note. And then the other one that I thought was maybe a bit too high was Alvin Kamara, relative to what we had seen recently, what he still overall looks like in a world without Mark Ingram in that backfield with him, versus a guy like Derrick Henry, who led the league in rushing and yards after contact last year, a guy like Nick Chubb further down on that list that our own Mina Kimes took umbrage with being that low on this one. So who did you have an issue with here?
By the way, I should point out that the list was compiled by surveying more than 50 league executives. So even though Jeremy Fowler put the list on ESPN.com, don't at Jeremy.
Yeah, I can say that his list.
Create the list. This was created. In all seriousness, not just because of my mega fandom, I think that Josh Jacobs is low at 9. I thought that Joe Mixon was a little high at 8. I'm with you that Kamara was, I think, a little high at 4. So, you know, I'm with the Chubb conversation. I think there's this counterculture that's happened for the Browns in general, because everybody had such incredible expectations last year and they weren't met. I feel like there's been this clapback mentality where suddenly everybody's overcorrected and now we're underrating some of those players. Chubb surprises me that he would be at number 7.
Honestly, we also need to have a conversation here too. And this is a faction of Twitter we've gotten to know over the last couple of years. Do we have to free Aaron Jones again? Like, all he did was have 16 touchdowns last year. all he's done is be one of the most efficient rushers in the league. If you were to put together the analytics list of running backs, Aaron Jones might be near the top because he was an efficiency monster 2 years ago. And as that offense, and especially, I know this is going into this season, so I'd imagine there's some eye towards the future in all this. And that offense, all it's done is talk about how Matt LaFleur wants to have an offense that, you know, is emblematic of what Kyle Shanahan's been building out in San Francisco. Well, we know what plays a pretty big part in that, so he seems like he'd be primed for that, and I love Le'Veon Bell to death. I think Le'Veon Bell deserves some sort of medal or a trophy for what he had to put up with last year and what he had to do as a running back just to get back to the line of scrimmage on some plays. That guy had to make chicken salad out of gravel last year, and somehow he still made a dish that was worth eating. That being said, might be a tough sell based on last season to get in there over a guy like Aaron Jones.
So we agree at this point that Christian McCaffrey should be one, Saquon should be two.
Are you in with McCaffrey at one?
I think for McCaffrey, it's not just about what he is running the ball. I mean, running back is a total position, and what he does out of the backfield is unmatchable. So to me, what you're looking at, his ability to do so many different things so incredibly well makes him the best in the league.
How high do you still want Zeke?
This is where I'm torn, because if we're just talking about what we've seen, I mean, I have a hard time putting Zeke ahead of Derrick Henry. I do. I have a hard time putting Zeke ahead of Derrick Henry. That being said, that's tough. No, I'm gonna put Derrick Henry ahead of Zeke. I don't know how good I feel about
it. Do you have a top five based off this? Because we've got McCaffrey and Saquon as our consensus one and two on all this one. Who is three on your list?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Derrick Henry at three. I'll go with Zeke at four. And I'm going to put Dalvin Cook at five. It's between Cook and Chubb.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Jacobs should be number one, but, you know.
Understandable on that one. I think I'm with you with Henry at three now. It's going to be interesting what this season looked like. Obviously, last year was such a jump for him, such a dominant performance. But we know also that offense was one. And remember Dan Orlovsky talking about this and breaking this down really well going into the playoffs, that threw early, that kind of passed to set up the run, so to speak, in a lot of this, the whole notion of, you know, what you've got to do with play action. But they would go deep a lot early that would create some better situations for Derrick Henry. That being said, still, number one in yards after contact, so we know doing the work there, a physical force of nature, and the league's leading rusher last year, I'd put him at three.
He was also the league leader, in rushing attempts and yards against boxes of eight or more defenders. So even when they stacked him, he still had 106 rushes for 572 yards when he was facing a stacked box.
So that's always the amazing part to me, is that so many of these, like Kyle Shanahan, who we always talk about as a great play caller, is great at manipulating those looks even if there's guys around the box. Titans just lined up and slammed their meat slab into your meat slab and said, we have a defensive end hammer thrower in the backfield who's going to find his way through. And he did. He did for the majority of last year, and he deserves credit for that. So,
and Joe Mixon, by the way, I do want to point out one thing. Joe Mixon's number eight on this list. It's a reminder that there are offensive weapons in Cincinnati. And I know Cincinnati's bad every year. I get it. But I just feel like Joe Burrow coming into Cincinnati has been blessed into this situation where he's going to have weapons all around him. So I'll be interested to see where Mixon goes on this list with Joe as the quarterback.
Is Joe Burrow now become under-discussed storyline going into the season? I feel like he's the least talked about number one overall pick coming off the greatest college football season that we've ever seen. Like, I get the Bengals are bad, but it seems like we've just ignored him discussing quarterbacks going into this season in a way that I can't understand. All right, do you want the more important top five list and all this?
Yes,
one?
I want the
I can give it to you real quick.
Yeah, give it to me.
Top five NFL thighs.
Oh, top five thighs?
It's NFL thigh. You know, it's thigh day around here on Golic and Wingo. Obviously, Saquon Barkley being up near the top of this one is noteworthy. Near the top of the running backs
list
of this one.
I just wanted, okay, so you've got...
I've got a list of the top five thighs in the NFL. Do you want to hear about them?
Can we call them thigh guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thigh guys, top five. Go
All right, on. Can I get that NFL music back up there real quickly? I'll blaze through this list. I don't need the sounders. I just need the feeling behind me here. All right, number five on this list. You ready?
Yes.
Because he has to be involved in everything workout related, I am putting here just so he won't hurt me. Aaron Donald, number five on the list. I've never actually seen his thighs, but I assume that much like his pecs and abs, they're in tip-top shape. So Aaron Donald, number five on this list, because he needs to be involved in every workout list. Number four, Gardner Minshew. Jorts wearing Jesus. Real thick, sturdy quads in that one. Looks great in the uniform. Looks even better when he's off duty on that one. Pairs very well with a mustache. Number three, let's give it up for Bo Allen. Defensive tackle, former Wisconsin Badger. Thick thighs save lives. Well, my friends, Bo Allen might be saving this entire nation because he's got enough thigh to feed Thanksgiving for the next 1,000 years in whatever house you're a part of there. A big man, a powerful man, and a friend of the show. So Bo Allen checking in at number three on this list. Number two, this is where it got tough. Number two, I'm going with Cam Newton. You saw a little bit of the show the other day there. Showed up to the Patriots facility, thighs out, for the sky. That was already out on this one. Toned, but still enough mass there to justify a place on this list. Long legs, a freak athlete in a lot of regards in here. Cam Newton brings a tremendous amount of ability to the thigh game. And then number one, there's only one place to go. It is Saquon Barkley, number one on the list. The entire reason for the season on this one, a thigh day king. Saquon Barkley is the best there is, and he puts the work into it, and that's why I want to reward that here. Much like Patrick Mahomes' $500 million contract in the NFL, when you are the best at what you're supposed to do and an important role in all this, you need to be treated as such. You need to be rewarded as such, and so to not put Saquon on the top of this list would be an affront to the entire notion of list making in general.
Gola Gawingo presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. At some point, we need to do a deep dive into how you did your thigh guy film study. That's the real question here. Like, was there measuring tape? Did you go for measurables? How did you figure out your top five thigh list? Like, that's...
My Google search history is awkward.
That is very true. Coming up, how close are we to a mega deal for Dak Prescott? We'll ask our NFL front office guru after this SportsCenter update from our favorite thigh guy.
Yeah, maybe I could be number six on that list. Maybe, you know, NFL tangent enough in the media. We'll get to it in post. SportsCenter, the Big Ten is moving all fall sports to a conference-only model as decided by the league on Thursday. This includes football, making the Big Ten the first Power 5 conference to shake things up for the fall. We lose some great out-of-conference matchups. Ohio State was originally set to face Oregon early in the season, while Notre Dame would have played Wisconsin at Lambeau Field. On the golf course, Tiger Woods is making his return to the Memorial Tournament this upcoming Thursday, his first action since February. Woods, a five-time winner at the event, is one win away from passing Sam Snead for the most wins in PGA Tour history. Woods, remember, missed time earlier this year due to some back stiffness. And on this date in 2010, the Miami Heat acquired Chris Bosh from the Toronto Raptors to complete the Big Three with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. The trio went on to win two NBA titles in 2012 and 2013. That SportsCenter is brought to you by Goodyear. Goodyear believes that movement drives us forward, and they believe in the importance of a pit stop. Sometimes that's all it takes, a moment to pause before we all start moving again. So as you get ready for the road ahead, Goodyear's here to help. Visit Goodyear.com to learn more. Goodyear, more driven.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. Jason fits in for Trey Wingo and Mike Golic, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. All right, we've been talking a lot about contracts, and anytime that we talk about the contract to Patrick Mahomes, it has to lead to the what's next contract for Dak Prescott. So to get some thoughts on the crazy funny money that's out there, let's go to the Shell Penzo Performance Line, where we're joined by ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. Mike, first and foremost, hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for giving us some time early this morning, man. We appreciate you. So your initial reaction as a former front office guy when you see 10 years and, you know, $477 million was...
Yeah, great to be with you guys, and good morning. I hope you're safe and healthy. The answer to the question was, wow. But when you really think about it, guys, it was the perfect storm. You have a high-character, productive player who's a Super Bowl champion before the age of 25, whose play style totally fits where the NFL is going, and you want to get him for as many years as possible. And while some people said, well, you know, Patrick Mahomes doesn't get a second bite of the apple, you know, his children's 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 are taken care of. So to have generational wealth is something, and security is something, you know, you can't begrudge anybody. And when you look at the cap number of guys, players like Chris Jones gets to stay for another year or two. Sammy Watkins may get to stay for a year, Travis Kelce. And at some point when those cap numbers go up, those players will have to graduate and they'll have to continue to draft well, which is, you know, they've obviously done a great job of.
Mike, I'm curious. We've talked so much about the potential effect that this contract signing might have an effect on Deshaun Watson and others, but certainly Dak Prescott and the immediacy, as we now have 5 days before that July 15th deadline. I wonder, at the very least, does seeing the relationship that Patrick Mahomes, that team in front office have, just reinforce for Dak Prescott that the Cowboys don't seem to value him in a way that most starting quarterbacks at his level should be valued in this league?
Mike, I totally agree with you. And, you know, we've talked about this for the better part of a year, which is I just don't understand strategically why you would sign Zeke Elliott 2 years ago on his contract before you sign Dak Prescott. And let's go behind the curtains. It's July 14th. We're in Dallas, and I'm Todd France. And basically I say, you know, there's one of two quarterbacks in the history of the pro football that have thrown for 15,000 yards and won 40 games in their first 3 years in the league, 4 years in the league. And that's Dan Marino and Dak Prescott. And look, I have 40 wins. Russell Wilson has 40 wins over the last couple of years. And if you don't want to pay me, no problem, because somebody else will. And I'll easily play for $31 million this year. I took the risk a year ago. We're through that now. So now, if you don't want to pay me, no problem. I have all the leverage in the world.
We're talking to ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum. So, Mike, I'm going to make you the GM for the Cowboys. How different was your conversation the day after the mega deal for Patrick Mahomes than it was the day before?
Yeah, Jason, it cost them millions of dollars. It was they made a strategic mistake, and they're going to pay somewhere between, in my opinion, $6 to $7 million a year per year for it. Because if a year ago they were talking about numbers in the low 30s, which is, you know, where a bunch of good quarterbacks are, like the Ryan Tannehills, and you know, there's a whole bunch of guys. We could break down Goff's deal and others, but they're all somewhere between, let's just say, 30 to 33 million. You know, now if Russell Wilson's at 35 and Mahomes is at 45, if I'm Dak Prescott, I don't take the phone call for anything less than 37 to 38 million. Now, with that said, I think one place where Dallas did make some progress is, you know, Mahomes signed for 12 years, and I know one of the issues that's holding up Prescott's deal right now is length. So the fact that Dallas wants to go longer, obviously having a 12-year deal on the board helps that position. But from an average per year, Dak Prescott continues to make more and more money.
So, Mike, with all of these things in mind, the front office perspective in Dax, July 15th comes. Do you think we're getting a deal done, or is he playing on the tag?
Oh, I think he's playing on the tag, and here's why. If he was playing on the minimum a year ago, and, you know, if let's put ourselves in Dak Prescott's shoes, you know, he could have signed last year for whatever amount of money guaranteed, $100 million plus or minus, and he risked that to play on a rookie minimum deal, and now he's going to make $31 million. It's a lot easier to take that risk with $31 million in the bank than with nothing in the bank. So unless he gets every T crossed and I dotted the way he wants, why would he take anything else but, you know, a perfect deal in his opinion?
Talking to ESPN NFL front office insider Mike Tannenbaum, Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, Jason Fitz, in for Trey Wingo and Mike Golic, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. So, Mike, you know, the other big story that came out over the last couple of weeks has been the reduction of preseason. The NFL Players Association would like for there to be no preseason. If there is no preseason, what effect does that have on the front office of a team as they try and build their roster?
Yeah, I think it really hurts young players, developmental players. I think it hurts players that are new, and it's going to reward continuity and incumbency. You know, let's go to opening day. Everyone's talking about Drew Brees and Tom Brady. And Drew Brees and Sean Payton have been together for over a decade, and all those reps, walkthroughs, and mini camps. And now you have Tom Brady, who's actually never taken a snap under center with Bruce Arians. Like, that matters. So I think from a player development standpoint, it's going to hurt the younger players. And I think from a competitive standpoint, the teams that have returning coaches, play callers, and quarterbacks have a massive advantage.
We've heard teams also, Mike, talk about maybe bringing fewer than the normal 90-man rosters into camp, trying to limit the amount of bodies they've got on hand there. But how do you weigh that versus what we know could be the case of needing to have more guys that you know and are aware of should players test positive during the season, should you need players on short notice at certain positions? How are you balancing all of that in the front office when you set a board and try and have an understanding of this?
Yeah, great point. You know, I think what a number of teams are looking at is they're looking at maybe rotating, you know, half the building, working out and practicing, the other half virtual meetings, just to minimize the amount of contact that there is. And, you know, from a population, you know, sort of like the density aspect of having these buildings so crowded this time of year. And then I think the other point is really interesting, which is like, and we've heard Bruce Arians mention it publicly, which is, you know, are we going to quarantine a quarterback or two because, you know, nobody wants us to watch a game this year where some team has, you know, two quarterbacks in quarantine because of, you know, a positive test. And now, you know, they're starting, you know, a wide receiver, a quarterback. So I do think we'll see for this year only, maybe, you know, in terms of like the practice squad, maybe all players are eligible for that. And then what that'll do is that will allow players to maybe not be in the facilities that much, but, you know the system, know the scheme, and can, you know, come in on short notice. I think one of the other things we're going to see, and I know we've seen it in the NBA already, which is we're going to see a lot of soft tissue injuries because players, even, you know, the best in the world, like, they need structure. And while they can work out on their own, there's nothing like simulating practice, especially, you know, this time of the year where it's hot in so many parts of our country. So I do expect, you know, to see a number of soft tissue injuries, especially early on when we get to training camp.
Mike, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your expertise. Thanks for hanging out with us this morning. Stay safe, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, same here, guys. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Mike Tannenbaum, ESPN NFL front office insider. And, you know, it's going to be different this year trying to figure out how to manage, because he just mentioned you're going to see more soft tissue injuries, Mike. And I keep looking across the board thinking a GM's job has never been more difficult than it will be this year, trying to have their own big board of what to do when people start going down, because inevitably they will go down. And there won't have been a traditional preseason, an opportunity for undrafted guys, fringe guys, like when you were trying to make rosters, like those opportunities aren't going to be there. So you're really going to find out which organizations have great GMs and which, quite frankly, don't.
It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Mike Golic Jr., Jason Fitz here, skies out, thighs out for everybody, and it's time to absolutely decimate the English language. We're stupid. It's that bites. It's, I think, slowly more from just sound bites from the week in sports that made us laugh to sound bites of us messing up during the course of this segment, Jason. That's why we start with you, because that is a hard and fast rule, is you can't provide a that bites moment while in the that bites segment. Well, Jason, that was you last week.
We all know I can't read. That's what bites. Coming up next, why Daniel Snyder's motivation to change the team name might go beyond FedEx's statement. Go look at Wingo.
That bites.
Oh.
You can feel it just slipping away in those moments. Because once you make one mistake, you know we're all looking for it.
You know, sometimes I hear myself and I wonder how they ever let me host OTL. Okay, Junior, it's funny. I'm not the only one who can't speak very well. Listen to you try to use the English language and leaving everyone confused.
Mina Kimes with us here on Golic and Wina. Mina, Golic and Wingo. Golic and Wina. I don't
know. So it's Golic and Wingo. I'm Jason. She's Mina. You're Mike.
I'm not a great talker. I am my father's son, if nothing else, on this program.
Ah, that bites.
I helped you get through it. I'm here to help you.
Wina. It's, I don't even like the way that sounds. Terrifying. All right. Stop making this about us. Let's make it about the important thing in the world. Fight Island. We got a chance to talk to Ariel Helwani about the upcoming fight between Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman this weekend. Well, Ariel had a chance to talk to Masvidal, and Masvidal was very descriptive in what he was going to do to the Nigerian Nightmare.
How do you see it playing out? Could you give us a preview? How do you see it actually going down?
Me baptizing his ass in front of the whole world.
So you think you knock him out?
Cold-blooded as can be. His body's grasping for air. I got my hand raised over him. Just going to baptize him, man, for the world to see. It's going to be violent.
Early or late?
It's going to start violent. It's going to end violent. I don't know, first round, fifth round. I don't know, but it's gonna, just like I said in the Nate, and the Till and the Ashken fight, and every fight I've ever been a part of, I'm going to give it everything I have in my being to leave this guy unconscious and for a long time. Now, I don't like to just touch that little button and then they go to sleep and then they wake up and they're like trying to wrestle with the referee. No, no, no. You know me. I like to hold that button down. I want to make sure that when you come back to this world, you're spaced out. You're in an ambulance headed somewhere and your cornerman got to tell you what happened because you got no recollection of it. Especially with a guy like Usman, I wouldn't mind if the referee trips on the way to stopping me and I get in a couple extra shots.
That bites.
I feel like that's what you say about me before I come in on Friday mornings.
He's treating the button that knocks a person unconscious like it's the turbo button in NBA 2K. I don't want to just tap it. I want to hold it down the whole time and dribble around everybody.
Okay, that was fun. And it was nice, but I like to get back to making fun of you. Your dad, Michael Olick Sr., is a legend. He loves to embarrass you. He's done a lot over the years, but my favorite's when he makes you uncomfortable while having the sex talk with you on the program.
You ever been in a college football training room and had the porn bed music playing while your dad talks about doing the hibbity-dibbity in front of all your teammates and the people that you go to work with in college every day?
How did that work out?
You ever had that as a part of your life, Trey?
How did that work out?
Not great. You ever had a weightlifting accident that involved, you know, your you-know-what and had that broadcast on air the next day? You ever had that, Trey?
No.
Nah, welcome
That's to... That's why I don't lift weights.
Mike, I feel bad for you, buddy. Like, you need a socially distanced hug? Like, your dad's been very transparent about some of your issues.
Well, yeah, like some of my issues, but literally it is the flow chart of my dad is like peak America's dad joke purveyor, and he will never miss an opportunity if there is a free bit of time in the day that he comes up with in a story. And my mom might be around for that. Rest assured, he's going to make a sex joke. Like, it is the next line on the flow chart there. He is obligated by dad law to do so, and he always makes sure that he does. All right, ending on a high note here. All I got to say for this clip is L. Duncan, Knock If You Buck, weddings, and table salads. Let's go.
Before we sat down and ate dinner and did the whole, you know, all the histrionics with the speeches and stuff, I wanted everyone to know what was coming after dinner. And so he goes right to Wicked, and I'm like, all right, so everybody loses it. And then he just immediately goes, Knock If You Buck. And I looked at him, and he was like, he just started smiling and nodding his head. And there's a video, I have to find it, that a friend took. And all you see is me in my wedding dress, and I spike, just like this, I spike my veil to the yo, like it was... I spiked it. I was like, we're done. It was already like a mosh pit 10 minutes into my wedding, and it was incredible. It got to a point where my wedding planner comes over, and she's like, Elle, they want to serve salads, but no one will sit down. Can you please tell the DJ to stop? We didn't eat till 10:45. It was ridiculous.
That bites.
I still can't get over the image of this little like wedding planner on the side that's like, but you wanted the ranch and the blue cheese. I mean, it's all about
the half salad. Of them didn't even mark chicken or steak on the RSVP. The arugula is getting cold. I don't know what to do in this situation. All because Knock If You Buck is a force of nature.
My world has been shattered by this, by the way, and it has inspired some of what you've been doing on social media. We've been asking people to send us their moment from their wedding, their whatever that hype song is, where you know everything is just it's there, like and everything takes a higher level. Your Knock If You Buck moment, if you will.
A guy tweeted into me and said his wife got up on stage and rapped at their wedding and directly told both sets of their parents, don't hold your breath on grandkids right now. Like, that is a weird version of combining the sex talk idea and this wedding notion all into one ball of discomfort for everyone attending.
At least it wasn't the rehearsal dinner for that talk. You know, that's the only thing you can say there that tries to make it easier. That's that bite. I'd like to say, though, nothing from this week. We've been flawless together the last several days, apparently, because we finally didn't make the cut.